Okay, well, what you need to know is that I've cut the story back to fit my time slot. So Pascal, when he turns up in the story, is the protagonist's boyfriend, and he is an illegal immigrant from the Congo. The confidence trick. Shanae woke suddenly, and with the uneasy feeling that some greyish, hooded creature had just brushed past her. The plane was warm, and most of her fellow passengers were still asleep. She slid a hand under the aircraft blanket onto the hard globe of her stomach and left it there. Don't use the toilet and stay cool. Michelle, esquistor. Her neighbor on the aisle side, Peter, was touching her shoulder. Excuse me, hey, can I tell you something? She'd lied to him that she was Michelle, an exchange student coming home from 6 months at a Sao Paulo language school. You talk in your sleep, Michelle. Did you know that? Middle-aged, with brandy on his breath. He'd said he was a doctor, but he didn't look the type. He looked like a good old boyke, the pickup driving, brandy and coke drinking sort who hung around the bars of Funderbell Park, dreaming of undressing girls like her in some failed motel room at the end of the night. Peter's fleshy fingers were squeezing the mermaid tattoo on his forearm, kneading it rhythmically. The sleeve of his blazer was crumpled, and she wondered uneasily why this badly wrapped parcel of a man was so watchful, why he hadn't tilted his seat back to sleep. She needed to calm down, but he was checking her out, his small, sharp eyes unblinking. Uh-huh, you were getting more of an angry. Sounded like you were calling somebody some very bad names. Sorry to keep you from sleeping, Peter. Shanae stroked her stomach gingerly. She needed the bathroom. And you haven't eaten the whole flight. A young lady in your condition with a baby on the way. His voice was soft, persistent. Fuck all to do with you, my condition. Now Peter was taking the in-flight magazine out of its pocket and holding it up theatrically to the overhead light. Yeah, and he also sounded so sad, Michelle. A nice, blonde girlie like you on her way home from language college. Now tell me, Michelle, what have you got to cry about? The cabin gave a sudden lurch. The air rushing through the jet engines rang shriller now, as the plane began to struggle gamely with unseen assailants out there in the mist. Seatbelts were clinking with a sound like marbles pouring slowly into a sack. Stupid bloody fool, how'd she let them talk her into this? Wiping her sweaty palm from her jeans, she turned away from the man beside her and peered out at the sky. Outside, long fingers of rain were stroking the windows, and she wondered if it would be raining on her grandfather's farm. Fat drops bouncing on warm red soil, darkening the thorn bushes and the striped pelts of springbuck. Funny how she still thought of that old plot as home, although her family hadn't lived there since she was 7. Years of drought had sucked the life out of everything. Even the grass by the dam had turned brown. So once the government had started cutting farm subsidies, the bank had just taken everything back. What's wrong, Michelle? Peter again, craning towards her now, pretending to look out through the window. The plane was descending. Soon they'd be landing in Johannesburg. She could see the spray of dandruff on his shoulders. Make him shut up. Ugh, Peter, sorry, just tired, you know? She tried to smile, but she knew it would have come out pinched. You're sorry? Yeah, I'm sorry too. And I've got plenty to cry about. These days, you have to learn to survive with less than 4/5 or 5/8 of fuck all. Yeah, what can you do, hey? Tell me, Michelle, you ever had an older boyfriend? This time, Shanae slumped down in her seat, saying nothing. She thought of Ma and the 20 other homeless Afrikaners who lived like them, stuffed into shacks and tents on that filthy patch of soil behind the church hall. Ma would be planning to go to the soup kitchen today, whereas she, Charnay Delport, had just had a week's paid holiday lying by a pool in the sun, like some bloody film star. She slid a finger up the bridge of her nose where her sunglasses had sat. They were coming into land. Get ready. Outside, distorted in the convex window of the plane, she could see that three of the letters spelling out the airport's name were missing. The dilapidation was a crumb of comfort somehow. Slack might be part of the way things worked around here. She watched as a baggage truck, orange lights blinking, sped across the tarmac. Behind it, two yellow vehicles. Police, looking for illegal immigrants. Terrorists, maybe. Or a girl with a stomach stuffed with cocaine. The first shock had been that the promised beachfront hotel had never materialized, but the big house they'd brought her to instead was so beautiful, Charnay hadn't cared. She'd caught a glimpse of Sao Paulo anyway when Zay, the tall guy with the cowboy boots, picked her up from the airport. Patches of color flying past like hallucinations. A giant blue neon Christ on a billboard, arms outstretched. Jacarandas, plumbago and hibiscus everywhere, just like home. Police with guns, too. Even a big shanty town, right near the rich neighborhood where the villa was. With nothing to do but wait, she'd spent most of her time by the pool in her sunglasses, eating Prego rolls and staring up at the hot blue January sky. The hardest decision had been how to blow the money they'd given her up front if they weren't going to let her out through the spiked electronic gates. In the end, she'd told Zay what she'd wanted, and he'd gone out and bought it for her. A leather jacket from a big department store, something she'd spotted in Vogue, Brazil. Champagne-coloured, like her hair. She wondered where Zay was right now. Zay, with eyes like licked caramels. Charnay had seen him checking her out as she emerged from the pool, more aware than ever of how the soft swell of her belly made her hips sway. She was glad she was still so small, even now, with 29 weeks gone. Despite not knowing the language, she had understood everything that was going on between them. But in the end, Say had never so much as touched her hand. On the fifth day, yesterday, Say had arrived with a laptop and a big-breasted, hard-faced woman called Maria. She'd chopped out some lines on the dog-eared TV guide, looking faintly surprised when Charnay refused. Then she'd got down to business, spreading the contents of the laptop case out on the blue floral bedspread. The pill to swallow so Charnay couldn't go to the toilet on the plane. The chloroseptic spray to loosen up her throat. Finally, the coke, half a kilogram in 28 condom wrapped pellets, the size of her thumb. Swallow, no chew, see? Maria had explained, throwing her head back and demonstrating, her throat supple and brown against the whiteness of her t-shirt. Two, yes? Every 20 minutes. Take your time, easy, nice. Simply the thought of that stuff near the baby, swimming in its own clean sack, made her feel faint and sick. She'd stammered that there'd been a mistake, that the Joburg people had told her she'd be bringing a package home in the lining of a suitcase. There'd been a nasty moment of silence. Zay had stopped shifting the match he'd been chewing from one side of his mouth to the other, his face suddenly very still. Then Maria had forced a smile. Mama Pequina, little mama, she cooed. No one will suspect a pregnant woman, much safer than inside a suitcase. Then she'd pushed her mouth up close to Charnay's ear. Otherwise we keep you here and you don't go home, she'd said. You want your money, white girl? Then work for it. Does anyone at your house even know where the fuck you are? They'd sat with her then for the next 5 hours while she swallowed, feeding her sips of water from a toothbrush glass. About halfway through, when her dry retching wouldn't stop, Maria had rummaged in her bag for a half-full bottle of massage oil, and she'd shut her eyes and pretended it was medicine. They'd explained again how the rest of it would work, too, how when she got to Joburg, someone would be waiting for her at the airport. She'd go to another hotel, take another pill, wait for it all to come out. It could take a couple of days, they'd said, and after that, she'd get paid. And now there were police at the airport before the plane had even stopped moving. Sharnay had a sudden, desperate longing to see her mother's face. She and Ma, she knew, would not meet again for a long while, not after this. For Ma, clinging to the old days, recognizing nothing in what the politicians called the Rainbow Nation, would never understand where all the money had come from, or how far Sharnay had fallen. But there was nothing she would now not do, including begging a black man for help, to lift herself beyond the limits of that church shack and seize her place in the larger world. How, inside, she was aching and hot and always empty. A farm overrun by the forest. Her fields were all on fire. The air was filled with smoke and nobody seemed to see. Fool, you bloody fool. But Sharnay, you are something special, Zay had comforted her. Not what the police will be looking for. There is your hair, your beautiful yellow hair, and your baby. These things, Zay had said, would see her clear through the airport. But those waiting policeman's vans made a nonsense of all that. Something had gone wrong. Hey, let us in, man. We're good South Africans. We all like rugby and we all drink beer. A big guy in glasses and a green dashiki shirt was joking with an immigration official at the passport booth up ahead. A public sector strike, another one, was in full swing. And only a skeleton staff was on duty that day. Police had been drafted in, a hoarse voice had announced over the public address system, so that security at the airport would not be compromised. But everything was moving at an agonizingly slow pace. Just be patient, sir, and we'll try and get this sorted for you as quickly as we can. Soon it would be Sharnay's turn. It had taken almost an hour, but finally she had come almost to the front of the queue. But she'd also had to wait, the Lord knew how long, for the luggage. And before this queue had even started moving, she'd felt it. A pang of heat running through her body. The upwelling of a small, red pain. She tried to ignore it. Zay had told her these were good quality condoms, but you had to look after them, he'd said. Don't eat or drink on the plane. And be cool. Otherwise, acid from the stomach can melt the plastic. And then, he'd shaken his head. Someone he'd known once, a Rio woman, had got an overdose after a condom burst in her stomach while she was flying back from Lima. She'd drunk a ginger beer, then fallen down, saying she was all on fire. It'd taken her 6 days to die. Sharnay was next. Stepping forward, she felt the new bad feeling again, only this time it was stronger, clearer. Goeiemôre, meneer. How are you, sir? Her voice was steady, but she could feel sweat burning on her forehead and on the backs of her knees. The heat from her gut enveloped her, then slowly sank away. A policeman with a sniffer dog was idly circling the queue. She had not given herself away by any change of expression or sudden movement. She could count on that. Sawubona, welcome to Egoli. And where have you come from this morning? Sharnay gave him her biggest smile. That was an easy one. After telling the official what he wanted to know, she would continue on her way at an even pace. She began to answer, but found she couldn't remember the words. Instead, the pain was back again. The bird that was forcing its wings open in her stomach and pecking at her throat. And her heart was pounding loudly, making her feel dizzy and faint. She licked her lips, conscious of the officer with the dog coming up behind her on the left-hand side. Everything seemed to have gone still. The official was looking at her expectantly, ballpoint pen poised. A queer sense of calm coursed through her as she lowered her head to her hands, resting her forehead against the booth's dusty glass. She was drifting away, feeling hands warm on her shoulders, the fragment of a bad dream, a crow pecking the seeds from a swollen yellow sunflower, already fading. The hands were gentle and firm and smelled of familiar things, soap and pipe tobacco. She felt ancient, older than the heels. In the noise and the clamour, sinking fast behind her, she could just make out a whistle blowing, someone shouting, a dog whining. But her grandfather was pulling her towards him, stroking her forehead and holding her fast against his chest, and at last she was able to sleep. She was rich with Friday night wages, and there were swallows soaring in the mild October sun. The street where the Nigerian lived was lined with pawn shops and Greek restaurants. Shanae had never been to Hillbrow before. Muscled men leaned on bar stools at the doors of the strip clubs, talking to the beautiful girls in their high-heeled boots, smoking cigarettes and waiting. On the pavements, vegetable hawkers guarded their stocks, butternuts, and roasted chicken feet. She'd had to dodge out of the path of a Shangaan corncob vendor, heading home with a baby on her back and a brazier full of coals on her head. Black smoke had clouded her face, filling Shanae's nostrils and making her cough. She'd still been coughing when she stepped into the restaurant. Inside, at a window table, Pascal and Mr. Femi were waiting. They'd been sipping tins of Black Label beer, into each of which, Pascal told her later, the Nigerian had dropped several hits of speed. Mr. Femi had seemed delighted to see her. He towered over her, tall as a preacher, in his beautiful grey suit. Ordered chicken and rice for them all, with an expansive wave of a wrist adorned with a silver Tag Heuer watch. Then, in between mouthfuls, he told her the facts. A week's paid holiday to luxury resort. Cash for clothing and toiletries before departure. Spending money while she was there. And 30,000 rand when she got home. Or rather, almost a year's worth of rent on a little flat to make a nest for her and Pascal and the baby. Light and air seemed to push up between his words like tiny blessings. Sipping her Coke, Shanae had considered the risks. What she could count on, she knew, was that the police would not be checking for somebody like her. Someone so confident, so pregnant, and so white. Fact was, the blacker you were, the more suspect in this rainbow nation. Like when those Zulu cops had raided Pascal's apartment building, looking for illegal aliens. They'd picked up anyone whose skin was a darker black than your average South African, chucked them in the back of their van. Makwera Kwera, they called them. Cockroaches. Later, the deal in the restaurant sealed, Mr. Femi had waved them goodbye with another expansive smile, and they'd spun elated into the street. Up in his room, Pascal had made a shield from the wardrobe beside his bed, a signal to the other three men living there that this was his private time. He'd played her a song in French on his guitar. It was about her, he said, her beauty and courage. And when he got back to the DRC, it would go straight to the top of the hit parade and make both their fortunes. Then he'd kissed her nipples and they'd done it from behind so as not to hurt the baby. And she'd fallen asleep with the smell of the squeezed sap from their bodies on her hands. His or hers, it didn't seem to matter. Shanae awoke to the sound of a siren. Tubes dangled from the shiny white ceiling above her, swaying gently as they turned a corner. Her lips, Underneath what she realized was an oxygen mask. Felt dry and cracked. Her first thought was that she was back on the plane, but then it dawned on her, an ambulance. She was clear of the airport here, she'd bloody done it. A man, somebody wearing a blue paper mask and blue protective clothing, sat on the grey seat alongside her stretcher. He was reading an in-flight magazine. Peter. Her hands fluttered to pull away the mask. She had to tell him. But he noticed that her eyes were open, and he was moving towards her with soothing gestures. Michelle, my girl, he was saying, stroking a tangle of blonde hair from her face. That smell again on his hands, tobacco and soap. Michelle, you've gone into labour, but you're going to be absolutely fine. You're dilating very nicely. Asabliftoch, please. Her voice was hoarse. It sounded like somebody else's. I don't want it anymore. Get it out of me. I don't want it to hurt. Baby. Baby. But the man was telling her not to worry. Breathe in deeply now, Michelle, and relax, he was saying. After all, you've got something very precious inside you now, haven't you? Something you really don't want to lose. And bending over her with loving care, he began fitting the mask back onto her face.